Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List, and welcome to episode 36 of The Weekly List Podcast, which accompanies week 118 on The Weekly List website, theweeklylist.org, and corresponds to the week ended February 16, 2019. Welcome! Week 118 was the second longest list so far with 188 not normal items. This was quite a week, especially it was very tail ended. If you tuned out Friday and you tried to come back Saturday, you missed a whole lot. Friday, Trump had a Rose Garden press conference to roll out his national emergency before jumping on a plane to go play golf for the weekend at Mar-a-Lago. But even in the string of bizarre appearances Trump has given, and we've seen many, this definitely seemed like he is going downhill. He was sniffling the whole time. He seemed to lack direction with the speech. He skipped around different topics. He repeated lies and false statements that it seems as if now he's convinced himself of, even though they're not true, and added some new ones that we hadn't heard before just for good measure. As well as after we had the morning of Trump and everyone's head spinning, wondering what did we just listen to and does this man really have the buttons to our nuclear weapons, we got some big servings from the Mueller probe later on Friday, and that was all just one day. This was another week of chaos, and again, as I've been saying, as we get closer to the end of the Trump regime era, we're going to see a lot more activity, a pickup in activity, and we're certainly seeing that in week 118 that we're going to be talking about today. Trump also did a rather bizarre rally in El Paso, Texas, even though the people of El Paso, we're going to talk about, did not want him there, and the amount of violence they've had in that city has declined dramatically. So another manufactured crisis. But Trump rolled out, if you see the picture that accompanies this week, his Finish the Wall signs and had an insane campaign style rally where a reporter was, a cameraman was assaulted from BBC. So we're going to be talking about all those things and a whole lot more this week. This was a crazy week, a lot to catch you up on. I want to start off and sort of lay the groundwork with some polling. A CNN poll found 51% of Americans approve of the way Mueller is handling the investigation, while just 35% approve of the way Trump is responding. 33% believe Trump, 56% believe Mueller. That's going to be important, folks. News is, we are coming towards the end of the Mueller probe. On impeachment, 61% believe if Trump authorized his campaign to coordinate with Russia, he should be impeached. We're going to be talking about some stories related to that this week. And 65% support it if Mueller finds Trump tried to interfere in the investigation. So let's start out this week. One of the themes that we've talked about throughout these podcasts are everyday racism in our country, and it's impacting many of our communities, including sadly mine, in our schools. But when you have this kind of tenor from the person who is supposed to be the leader of our country, how do we cure these folks? I mean, we as parents need to all be speaking to our children. We need our schools to give them a safe place. But we started off this week, last Saturday, with Trump appearing to mock the Trail of Tears, in which thousands of Native Americans died in a forced relocation. Trump tweeted last Saturday, quote, "Today Elizabeth Warren, sometimes referred to by me as Pocahontas," again, offensive, but he keeps doing it, "join the race." Trump added, "See you on the campaign trail, Liz," and trail had all capital letters. The best defense that the conservatives could give Trump was Brit Hume saying that Trump doesn't know anything about history, and so he couldn't possibly think that was Trail of Tears. Lest we forget that 2 weeks ago on our podcast, we were talking about Trump evoking Wounded Knee, another deadly time for Native Americans. So this continues. And not just Trump, Donald Jr. also made light of Trail of Tears, quoting Trump's tweet, adding, "Savage!" exclamation point. And also actor Rob Lowe deleted a tweet mocking Senator Elizabeth Warren over her past Native American ancestry claims, in which he said, quote, would bring a whole new meaning to Commander-in-Chief. So that's what people who are young ones are looking at are seeing. And we'll have more of that this week. We also opened up the week on Sunday with Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney telling Fox News Sunday, if Congress will not give Trump money for his border wall, quote, we will go off and find the money someplace else, adding sort of move money around, which was sort of a prelude to what we had later in the week. We had an executive fiat, but you could see that they were already thinking about it as we opened the week. Mulvaney also said, we will go off and find money someplace, sort of move money around. He also said the regime was close to identifying the source of the leaks of Trump's daily schedule that we talked about last week, adding, based on his work at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that's Mulvaney, quote, it's nearly impossible to fire a federal worker. We still don't know who did leak the schedule. However, on Sunday, Trump defended last week's reporting on his executive time, which last week, according to Axios, was 60% of his time, tweeting, quote, it should have been reported as a positive, not negative, that I'm spending 60% of my time doing nothing. I probably work more hours than almost any past president. Obviously a lie. Trump also tweeted, quote, the fact is, when I took over as president, our country was a mess, adding several examples of why and saying, quote, I had no choice but to work very long hours. So, folks, I just want to point out the level of gaslighting that we're going to go through this week, as somebody who has to actually read these tweets and recycle them for you. And it is escalating. Trump is building an alternative truth. He is gaslighting us, and the lies and the repetition of lies, at least for part of our country, makes them seem true. So Trump tweeted that in the morning, and then later Sunday, Axios again reported a White House staffer had leaked an additional 4 days of Trump's private schedules from last week, showing that Trump spent 50% of his time in executive time during those days. So even when he was caught, he still spent half his time in unscheduled who knows what. Well, we do know what, watching Fox News and tweeting. On Sunday, Trump took a swipe at global warming when Amy Klobuchar announced her run for president, saying, quote, Klobuchar announced that she is running for president, talking proudly of fighting global warming while standing in a virtual blizzard. On Monday, Representative Ilhan Omar apologized after tweets saying support for Israel was, quote, all about the Benjamins, baby, which drew condemnation from fellow Democrats, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi. On Monday, Trump told reporters not to miss a beat. Remember, this is like the same guy that 48 hours ago was evoking the Trail of Tears and talking about Pocahontas. Trump told reporters of Rep. Omar, I think she should be ashamed of herself, adding, I think it was a terrible statement, and I don't think her apology was adequate. Note, she apologized. Note, you do this every day. On Tuesday, Trump called on Rep. Omar to resign and called her terrible, adding she should either resign from Congress or she should certainly resign from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. On Wednesday, Rep. Omar responded, tweeting, quote, you have trafficked in lies your whole life against Jews, Muslims, Indigenous, immigrants, Black people, and more. I learned from people impacted by my words. When will you? Well, I think I can answer that for you. Never. On Monday, other examples of racism this week in our country, everyday racism. The Roosevelt School District on Long Island said it had taken appropriate action after teachers displayed two nooses as part of a large classroom collage under the term back-to-school necklaces. On Monday, Ruben Diaz Sr., a member of New York City Council, said the legislative body is, quote, controlled by the homosexual community. Despite calls this week for him to resign, the speaker has refused, and he's also refused to apologize. On Monday, Democrats sought to put a cap on ICE detention beds, saying it will force the Trump regime to prioritize deportation for criminals and people who pose real security threats, not law-abiding immigrants. The Trump regime asked for 52,000 beds, given its claim that the number illegally crossing the border has reached 2,000 per day. Democrats are seeking for a cap of 16,500, which is the level when Obama left office. On Tuesday, rapper 21 Savage, was released from ICE custody on bond after being detained in week 117 for overstaying his visa. ICE refused to answer why it had originally refused to release him on bond. On Tuesday, Republicans in Wisconsin's state legislature blocked a resolution to recognize Black History Month, citing the resolution mentioned the former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. The Sandusky Register reported city leaders in Sandusky, Ohio, declared Election Day, this is some good news, will become a paid holiday replacing Columbus Day. Hopefully that's a precedent that we can see more of around the country. That city, by the way, is 69% white, 23% Black, and 7% Hispanic. So obviously that lays in, and 0.4% Native American. But replacing Election Day with Columbus Day as a paid holiday makes a whole lot of sense. On Tuesday, The Guardian reported that advocates say the Trump regime is continuing to separate families at the border, despite claims that the practice ceased with the end of zero tolerance, including separating children in El Paso, Texas, which we're going to be talking about today as well. Daily Beast reported a Trump regime report released on Tuesday revealed the regime is considering using Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo, Texas, to house detained unaccompanied immigrant children. Environmental law experts say Goodfellow, formerly used as a landfill site, is toxic and could pose serious health risks, including exposure to multiple toxic chemicals, heavy metals, and contaminated groundwater. On Thursday, the ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Customs and Border Protection on behalf of two American women who were stopped inside a convenience store in Montana in week 80 for speaking Spanish. The lawsuit claimed the women were shocked when an agent said their accent was, quote, very strong, and asked where they were born. The agent said he was dead serious and asked to see their identification. The agent also said Spanish is, quote, very unheard of up here. The agents have the authority to detain and question people up to 100 miles from an international border, in this case, citizens with Montana licenses who speak Spanish. On Thursday, AP reported the commander for the Portland, Oregon Police Rapid Response Team exchanged friendly text messages with the leader of right-wing extremist group Patriot Prayer. According to members of the Portland City Council, Lieutenant Jeff Nina exchanged collaborative text messages with Patriot Prayer leader Joey Gibson to provide aid and support for the white supremacist group's plan to demonstrate. Fox News refused to air a national advertisement for a film called A Night at the Garden, an Oscar-nominated documentary about the 1939 Nazi rally at Madison Square Garden. The ad was titled, It Can Happen Here. On Monday, Michael Cohen postponed his testimony scheduled for this week before the Senate Intelligence Committee due to post-surgery medical needs. This is Cohen's third postponement in February. YouTube announced it will no longer recommend videos that come close to violating its community guidelines, including conspiracy theory videos. Experts say the goal has been to keep people on the site to see the ads. The policy will now change. On Tuesday, ranking Democrat Mark Warner said he, quote, respectfully disagrees with the Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Richard Burr that the committee has not found evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. We talked about this story last week. In a rare public split of the leaders, Warner told reporters, quote, I'm not going to reach any conclusions until we finish the investigation, and we still have a number of key witnesses to come forward. Warner also noted that the Senate has not uncovered direct evidence, quote, We were never going to find a contract signed in blood saying, hey, Vlad, we're going to collude. But there may have been circumstantial evidence, which, by the way, is how most cases of this kind are play out and are tried. Warner added, quote, there's never been a campaign in American history that during the campaign and its aftermath and the campaign folks affiliated with the campaign had as many ties with Russia as the Trump campaign. We're going to talk more about that this week. Among the key witnesses to testify or come back to the Senate Intelligence Committee is Michael Cohen, who Burr said, quote, any goodwill that might have existed is now gone, after Cohen was seen out with friends reportedly on Saturday night and then postponed his testimony. Burr also added he would prefer Cohen appear before the committee prior to going to prison on March 6, but, quote, the way he's positioning himself by not coming to the committee, we may help him go to prison. The Atlantic reported, despite Burr claiming Christopher Steele had not responded to the committee's attempts to engage him, Democratic aides say Steele submitted written answers to the committee in August. Another contention is Burr's unwillingness to hire outside investigators, which experts saw as a red flag given the complex nature of the investigation, including items like financial transactions with Deutsche Bank. So, folks, we'd hoped that the Senate Intelligence Committee was actually doing good work and working together. Unfortunately, between last week and this week, we're now seeing the two leaders of that committee split by party. However, Trump never misses a chance to harp on any good news, and on Wednesday he tweeted, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and then all in cap letters, there is no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's actually not true what they said, but Trump is continuing to put that out there on his Twitter feed. On Wednesday, Michael Cohen's lawyer, Lanny Davis, disputed Burr's claim, calling them inaccurate, and said Cohen is suffering from severe post-shoulder surgery pain, but will testify to Congress before going to prison. This is where we are, folks. Trump's longtime fixer and lawyer is going to prison, and three Senate and House committees are trying to get him to testify before he goes to prison for helping to pay off to silence women. And separately, they want to hear from him on attempts to quid pro quo, to build a Trump Tower Moscow, in exchange for Trump doing what he's doing right now to help Russia. So sometimes, like, the truth is sitting there in plain sight is stranger than fiction. On Tuesday, the Washington Post reported on a meeting on August 2nd, 2016, that's just a few months before the election, between Paul Manafort, who at that time was Trump's campaign chair, Rick Gates, who was the deputy campaign chair, and Constantine Kilimnik, who is believed to have ties to Russian intelligence, at the Grand Havana Room. And it's emerged as support, according to the Washington Post, as a potential fulcrum in Mueller's investigation. Kilimnik, who's a Russian political operative, flew into the United States for the meeting. According to a partially redacted transcript of a February 4th hearing, the three discussed a proposal on the conflict over Ukraine. During the hearing, Judge Amy Berman alluded to Manafort handing off internal polling data from Trump's presidential campaign to Kilimnik, and that after the meeting, the three exited from three separate doors. So again, somebody with ties from Russian intelligence flew into New York for a secret meeting with Trump's campaign chair, Trump's deputy campaign chair. They discussed a peace plan in the Ukraine, and they handed off polling data, internal polling data. So take that in, folks. Mueller's team also said the false statements that Manafort made while cooperating were key lies about the August meeting and other interactions with Kilimnik, who, again, also has ties to Russian intelligence, but also Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, who we've been talking about extensively, who just had sanctions lifted on him. Strange how that works. On Wednesday, the judge ruled Manafort had lied to Mueller's team, breaching his cooperation agreement, and is no longer bound by the plea agreement, possibly adding additional years onto his prison sentence. The judge said Mueller's team established that Manafort, quote, intentionally made false statements to the FBI, Mueller's office, the grand jury, including his interactions and communications with Kilimnik. Manafort also lied about a payment from a company to a law firm, which he previously said was a loan repayment, and made material false statements on another case, which is not yet publicly known. The judge said she will factor in Manafort's lies in his sentencing on March 13th, where he faces up to 10 years in prison in the D.C. case, along with a possible 7 to 10-year sentence already in a related Virginia case. On Sunday, NBC News reported ahead of Trump's scheduled trip to El Paso, Texas, politicians and business leaders say his portrayal of their community is unfair, misleading, and exaggerated. In El Paso, violent crime has been cut in half since the 1990s, with recent data showing that fewer than 400 incidents per 100,000 people in McAllen, Texas, where Trump visited in January, has also seen a similar drop-off. Also, according to the U.S. Border Patrol statistics, the number of undocumented immigrants apprehended at the border dropped from nearly 120,000 in 2000, the year 2000, to 25,000 in 2017. We're mentioning these numbers because we know at the end of the week, Trump declared a state of emergency, and yet we see the number dropping from 120,000 to 25,000 in El Paso alone, where he went to make his case. On Monday, in a series of morning tweets, Trump ripped media fact checkers because, of course, why not? Quoting Fox News host Jesse Waters, who accused them of lying to the public, saying, quote, fact checkers have become fake news. On Monday, the El Paso County Commissioner's Court approved a resolution condemning the Trump regime for misinformation and lies about a crisis situation, noting 2017 was the lowest year of illegal cross-border migration on record in El Paso. So this is all the backdrop as Trump is going. The city is safer. It's the lowest amount of illegal immigration, and Trump is going there to make his case. Trump also in the morning attacked Democrats, saying, quote, they do not want us to detain or send back criminal aliens and are so self-righteous and angry, adding, loosen up, have some fun, the country is doing well. Trump also tweeted shortly after the additional Axios reporting on his considerable executive time, quote, no president ever worked harder than me, cleaning up the mess I inherited, exclamation point. On Monday, lawmakers said in a late evening that they had come up with an agreement in principle to avoid a government shutdown without giving Trump much of the money he thought for building his wall. The deal includes just $1.375 billion for 55 miles of fencing and does not include the cap Democrats wanted on ICE detention beds. Lawmakers hope to avoid a shutdown at the end of the three-week extension on Friday. On Monday, Trump was briefed on the committee's progress as he took stage in El Paso. He told the crowd, just so you know, we're building the wall anyway. Trump also said the wall, quote, has to be built. On the stage, banners read, finish the wall. Trump falsely claimed a big, beautiful wall right on the Rio Grande is already being built. Again, that's a lie that he repeats week after week. There's not a wall being built in Rio Grande or the other places he's claiming. The crowd chanted, lock her up and build the wall during his rally reminiscent of 2016. Trump said, quote, I will never sign a bill that forces the mass release of violent criminals into our country, and I will never abolish or in any way mistreat our great heroes from ICE and Border Patrol and law enforcement. Trump repeated his attacks on media fact checkers, his new target, telling the crowd, where are the fact checkers? Some of the most dishonest people in the media are the so-called fact checkers. Trump also went off topic, saying embattled Virginia Governor Ralph Northam would, quote, even allow a newborn baby to come out into the world, wrap the baby, make the baby comfortable, and then execute the baby. Democrat Beto O'Rourke held a protest rally in El Paso. Trump said, quote, we have 35,000 people tonight, and he has 200 people, he being Beto, 300 people, 200 or 300 people. Actual estimates were 6,500 for Trump and at least 10,000 for Beto. At the Trump rally, a BBC cameraman was attacked. A spokesperson said, quote, BBC cameraman Ron Skeens was violently pushed and shoved. A BBC reporter said the supporter also tried to smash the camera. A viral 36-second video captured a Trump supporter wearing a red Make America Great Again cap, shouting at the media as he was restrained by event security. The crowd's chant shifted from USA to Let Him Go. On Tuesday, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said in a statement that Trump, quote, condemns all acts of violence against any individual or group of people, including members of the press. Trump did not comment or tweet, however. On Tuesday, the White House Correspondents Association condemned the physical attack and called on Trump to, quote, make absolutely clear to his supporters that violence against reporters is unacceptable. Trump did not. Bloomingdale's issued an apology and removed t-shirts that read, quote, fake news from its stores after a reporter suggested on a New York news station that the clothing delegitimizes journalists. On Tuesday, at a meeting with his cabinet, Trump told reporters he is again considering a military parade in what he called a Salute to America parade, saying it would be a gathering as opposed to a parade. Trump suggested July 4th for the parade after having his request stymied by the Pentagon under James Mattis. This time, he would enlist the Interior Department, which oversees the National Parks Services. On Tuesday, Trump said he was, quote, extremely unhappy with the bipartisan shutdown deal, singling out Democrats and saying, it's sad. They're doing the country no favors. They're hurting our country very badly. A White House official told NBC News that even if Trump signs a deal, other options are on the table to build his wall, including redirecting federal funds through executive orders. On Tuesday, conservative commentator Ann Coulter, who basically seems to have been, other than Rush Limbaugh, the other person controlling Trump up until now, ripped Trump, tweeting, quote, Trump talks a good game on the border, but it's increasingly clear he's afraid to fight for it, adding, call this his yellow New Deal. On Wednesday, the New York Times reported White House aides sought to minimize the damage of Trump agreeing to a bipartisan deal by calling conservative news host Lou Dobbs and Sean Hannity and conservative lawmakers. Trump criticized Speaker Pelosi and Democrats, saying, quote, with the wall, they want it to be stingy, and again threatening to redirect federal funds, adding, but we have options that most people don't really understand. On Monday, California Governor Gavin Newsom announced he will recall the 360 National Guard troops who had been deployed to the border, saying the state would not be part of Trump's, quote, manufactured crisis. Let's remember last week we talked about the New Mexico governor doing the same thing. On Wednesday, Trump tweeted, quote, California has been forced to cancel the massive bullet train project after having spent and wasted many billions of dollars, saying the state owes the government $3.5 billion. On Wednesday, Governor Newsom responded, quote, fake news, adding, this is California's money allocated by Congress for this project, also desperately searching for some wall money, question mark. On Monday, Trump tweeted, quote, coal is an important part of our electricity generation mix, adding, Tennessee Valley Authority should give serious consideration to all factors before voting to close viable power plants. The 49-year-old coal plant Trump cited buys much of its coal from, drumroll please, Murray Energy. We've talked about them in the past. They are chaired by Trump mega donor Robert Murray. The TVA board, an independent agency, planned to meet on Thursday to discuss the closure of this 49-year-old coal-fired plant. On Thursday, the TVA said it would close the two coal-fired plants, including the one that purchased coal from Murray Energy. Kentucky Senators Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul had also urged the TVA to keep the plants open. On Tuesday, the Treasury Department daily statement showed the national debt passed $22 trillion for the first time. When Trump took office, the national debt stood at $19.95 trillion. The surge in the national debt resulted from Trump's $1.5 trillion tax cut for the rich and corporations in 2017, as well as a growth in domestic and military spending. On Thursday, the Internal Revenue Service released data showing for the first 12 days of this year's tax filing season, the first year reflecting Trump's 2017 tax law cut, the average tax refund was 8.7% less than in prior years. On Wednesday, the Washington Post reported Trump installed a room-sized golf simulator in the White House, which allows him to play virtual rounds at the course at courses around the world. The system costs around $50,000. White House officials say Trump paid for the installation, which, does anyone believe even if he paid for it, he's not going to reimburse himself? Please. And that Trump did not play during his executive time. Trump played 70 rounds of outdoor golf a year, about double Obama at 38 rounds. Oh boy. On Sunday, Daily Beast reported that according to multiple sources, Michael Sanchez, who is a brother to Lauren Sanchez, who has ties to Trump associate, was the one to give Jeff Bezos' texts to the National Enquirer. On Monday, the Wall Street Journal reported that America Media Inc. sought the Justice Department advice on whether it should register as a foreign agent after publishing a magazine promoting Saudi Arabia and Crown Prince MBS. We're going to be talking a lot about Saudi Arabia and Crown Prince MBS. We have been for several weeks, but that is continuing this week. AMI also sought Saudi financing in last year when considering an acquisition of Time, Sports Illustrated, Fortune, and Money. So just some interesting ties there. Again, we started discussing that last week between AMI, which is David Pecker's company, who leaked information last week and threatened to leak additional information on Jeff Bezos, owner of the Washington Post. On Tuesday, Trump ally Tom Barrack defended Saudi Arabia at a summit in Abu Dhabi, saying of Jamal Khashoggi's murder, whatever happened in Saudi Arabia, the atrocities in America are equal or worse. On Wednesday, in a rebuke to Trump, the House voted 248-177 to halt aid for Saudi Arabia's conflict in Yemen. The Senate passed a parallel resolution in December. Trump could vote to veto the resolution. Bipartisan members of Congress expressed fresh outrage after Trump's White House missed a legally mandated deadline, we talked about this last week, to report whether the regime believes Saudi Prince MBS is behind Khashoggi's murder. That deadline was last Friday. On Wednesday, FEMA Director Brock Turner resigned, saying in a statement he was leaving, quote, to go home to his family. A spokesperson for the agency said Turner's departure was unrelated to last year's vehicle controversy. On Wednesday, Politico reported former Interior Department Secretary Ryan Zinke, remember him, will team up with Corey Lewandowski. See, these people never like go away. They just kind of breed together and become corrupt. And in this case, join a lobbying firm called Turnberry Solutions, which is run by Lewandowski. So Ryan Zinke is now about to make money influencing the Trump regime from the outside. On Friday, a federal court in D.C. ruled that the Mashantucket Pequot tribe can revive a lawsuit and add new claims of political interference after the Interior Department under Zinke had blocked their plans to open a casino. On Tuesday, Jonathan Rayner, who was the former Vice President Dick Cheney's cardiologist, tweeted, quote, it's been 4 days since the president underwent his annual physical exam, and still no data has been released. What are they hiding? On Thursday, the White House released limited information on Trump's physical health, with a doctor citing Trump's, quote, remains in very good health. Trump reportedly weighs 243 pounds, making him technically obese. And for the record, I'm closer to 243 pounds than Trump is to 243 pounds. It's just absolute BS. On Tuesday, former Trump attorney John Dow told ABC News that the Mueller probe was a, quote, terrible waste of time, adding, I will be shocked if anything regarding the president is made public other than we're done. Dowd said Trump's cooperated, and at no time in history has anybody had this kind of look at communications with the president, adding, if he were supervising Mueller, I would tell him, knock it off, get it done. On Wednesday, Roger Stone's legal team asked the judge to hold Mueller's team in contempt, claiming they had publicly distributed the indictment prior to its release to CNN. Stone has used the raid to fundraise for his legal fees, writing in emails and on social media of the FBI's excessive use of force and equating it to the capture of Osama bin Laden and Pablo Escobar. On Thursday, in an interview aired on CBS, former acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe said he authorized an investigation into Trump's ties to Russia the day after meeting him in May 2017 for fear he would be fired. McCabe said he was speaking to someone who, quote, won the election for the presidency and who might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia, our most formidable adversary, adding, it troubled me greatly. And folks, you know, you read these things. This is the acting director of the FBI after Comey had been fired, saying it was speaking to someone who won the election and might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia. And I just to put this in context for how far down the rabbit hole we are, that kind of thing gets said, but everybody is so distracted and so worn out in the chaos that people barely notice. This is a major, major statement in addition to all the other news this week. On CBS This Morning, Scott Pele, who is a correspondent who interviewed McCabe, said McCabe disputes the assertion that Deputy Director Rod Rosenstein was joking about wearing a wire when he met Trump. Pele said there were discussions of the 25th Amendment, a, quote, counting noses on whether various cabinet members would vote. The full interview with McCabe about his new book will air Sunday. A spokesperson for Rosenstein released a statement saying he, quote, never authorized any recordings that Mr. McCabe references, adding there's no basis to invoke the 25th Amendment, nor was he considering it. As CBS was airing their story, The Atlantic published an excerpt from the book that McCabe wrote, saying that Trump wanted McCabe to send a sinister message to employees, and that McCabe said, quote, I felt the way I'd felt in 1998 in a case involving the Russian mafia. Shortly after, Trump attacked McCabe, tweeting, quote, disgraced FBI acting director Andrew McCabe pretended to be a poor little angel when in fact he was a big part of the crooked Hillary scandal and Russia hoax. Trump also called McCabe a puppet for leaking James Comey and part of an insurance policy in case I won, adding McCabe's wife received big dollars in capital letters from Clinton people for her campaign. Trump ally Lindsey Graham, remember him? Chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said in a statement, it was imperative that McCabe and others come before his committee to address what appears to be bias against Trump. I just want to point out the outsized influence Lindsey Graham has and how frequently we're talking about him in this list, and that seemingly quietly overnight he took over as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee before Grassley's term was up, and how aggressively he is acting week after week. Keep an eye on Graham. There is something amiss with Lindsey Graham. On Thursday, Alan Dershowitz, an informal advisor to Trump, told Fox News host Tucker Carlson of the Department of Justice discussing the 25th Amendment to remove Trump, quote, if that's true, it is clearly an attempted coup d'etat. Trump quoted Dershowitz, tweeting, quote, trying to use the 25th Amendment to try and circumvent the election is a despicable act of unconstitutional power grabbing, which happens in third world countries. On Thursday, Washington Post reported McCabe's book also took aim at former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, saying he did not read intelligence reports and often confused classified material with newspaper clips. McCabe also accused Sessions of being racist, saying he blamed nearly every societal problem on immigrants and uttered racist sentiment. Sessions also became overwhelmed in meetings on multiple subjects. So, Sessions, as we all thought, was just as despicable as the rest and fit right in with his incompetence. On Wednesday, in outlining their Russia probe, Democrats said at least three committees will be involved. House Intelligence Committee, which is Adam Schiff, will take the lead, along with House Financial Services and House Foreign Affairs. And that's Maxine Waters and Elliot Engel. House investigators also indicated they may target Ivanka Trump, citing a number of public reports about her involvement in the Trump Tower Moscow deal and saying she may have relevant information. On Friday, in a letter to White House counsel Pat Cipollone, House Oversight Committee Chair Elijah Cummings said two Trump attorneys may have lied to Congress about Cohen's hush money payments. Cummings also questioned the false statements made by the two attorneys, wondering whether they were acting at the direction of or in coordination with the president. On Saturday, Politico reported Representative Adam Schiff, chair of the Intelligence Committee, and Representative Elliot Engel, chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, are close to taking action to force Trump to reveal his private talks with Putin. Schiff and Engel are consulting House General Counsel Douglas Leder on the best way to compel the Trump regime to turn over documents and other information related to the one-on-one meetings. On Thursday, Daily Beast reported the Department of Homeland Security has gutted two task forces set up to protect against foreign adversaries meddling in U.S. elections in response to the 2016 election. The two task forces were set up as part of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Agency to secure election infrastructure and focus on foreign influence efforts, including through social media. The staff for both task forces have dwindled. Before midterms, the task forces reported to Chris Krebs, the Senate confirmed director, after leadership has been moved to someone lower in command. So just note that ahead of the 2020 elections, Trump is basically allowing the task force that are set up to keep our elections safe, allowing them to quietly be deconstructed and disappear. Experts say Trump has shown no interest in securing U.S. elections, color me shocked, or come up with a strategy. A lawmaker suggested these task force were never intended to be permanent. On Wednesday, House Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler said in a letter that Matt Whitaker may have misled the committee in his testimony last week, calling it unsatisfactory or contradicted by other evidence. Nadler said he would seek more information from Whitaker and that his staff would work for a reasonable accommodation about further information, leaving open the possibility of deposing him. On Thursday, William Barr was sworn in as the new Attorney General. Whitaker will stay on at the Department of Justice as a senior counselor in the Associate Attorney General's office. On Thursday, Fox Business host Lou Dobbs, we talked about him this week already, that Trump was trying to assure him, or his White House was trying to assure him that it was going to be okay, even if Trump signed the bipartisan deal. So they're all in cahoots on this. Anyways, Fox Business host Lou Dobbs called on Attorney General Barr, who had just been sworn in, to investigate Supreme Court Justice Chief John Roberts for his, quote, liberal-based appointments on the FISA court, which oversees surveillance. On Thursday, the White House announced that Trump will sign the bipartisan government spending bill, but would also declare a national emergency and seek $8 billion for his border wall under executive actions. As of 30, the $8 billion included the $1.375 billion in the spending bill, $600 million from the Treasury Department, $2.5 million from the Defense Department, and $3.5 billion from a military construction budget. Press Secretary Sanders said the executive action was, quote, to ensure we stop the national security and humanitarian crisis at the border. The Senate and House both passed the spending bill by large majorities. Speaker Pelosi told reporters if Trump declares a national emergency, Democrats would consider legal action, saying, first of all, it's not an emergency, and then added that Trump has tried to sell a bill of goods. On the one-year anniversary of Parkland shooting, Pelosi also warned Republicans that if Trump sets a precedent, a future Democratic president could declare gun violence a national emergency. And that actually is a national emergency. Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer released a statement on Thursday vowing to defend the Constitution's separation of powers, saying declaring a national emergency would be a lawless act, a gross abuse of power. On Friday, nonetheless, In a rambling, incoherent 50-minute speech from the Rose Garden, Trump declared a national emergency to build his wall, a campaign promise he had said Mexico would pay for in 2016. Trump was sniffling and often went off topic and ad-libbed during the speech. His remarks were confusing, full of false and misleading statements, and veered off to numerous unrelated topics. Before speaking about the national emergency, Trump opened with a long preamble about trade deals in North Korea, including falsely claiming Obama was on the verge of striking North Korea. Trump oddly noted after declaring the national emergency, quote, I can do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this. So I'm going to say that again. Trump said this as he was declaring a national emergency, quote, I can do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this. A statement certain to be used in legal challenges. In making his case, Trump falsely described a lawless, chaotic southern border. Illegal border crossings have actually been declining for decades. And it's not true that immigrants commit more crimes than native-born Americans. Trump used campaign-style rhetoric, quote, we're talking about the invasion of our country with drugs, with human traffickers, with all types of crimes and gangs. The Washington Post reported Trump used the word invasion 7 times. Trump also repeated a series of false claims, including, quote, a big majority of big drugs and the big drug loads don't go through ports of entry. They can't get through ports of entry, which is a lie. Trump also said, quote, you can't take human traffic, women and girls, you can't take them through ports of entry. This is also false. About 80% of human trafficking passes through official ports of entry. Trump also used an unproven and exaggerated claim. Quote, you have chain migration where a bad person comes in, brings 22 or 23 or 35 of his family members. They're all here. So again, these are, I'm like repeating these back because I have to record them for the list, but these are lies that we've spoken before. And we keep saying this is a false statement. These are false claims. And Trump just got up there, started sniffling, started going left and right, and was incoherent and rambling and telling these same lies, sort of like almost on a track of some sort. He acknowledged he would likely lose in lower courts, and the U.S. Courts of Appeal for the Ninth Circuit, which he likes to single out, would probably rule against him before he ultimately got a fair shake in the Supreme Court. The White House claimed over 50 national emergencies had been declared since 1976 when Congress enacted the National Emergency Act, allowing presidents to bypass Congress. However, the New York Times reported there is no precedent for Trump's national emergency where a president has asked for funds from Congress, been denied, and then used emergency powers to get funds and move forward. Of past national emergencies, 51 of 59 have been related to imposing sanctions or trade regulations on foreign officials or groups for things like human rights violations, terrorism, or narcotics trafficking. Only once has a president's national emergency been challenged in court in 1952, the case of Youngstown Sheep and Tube versus Sawyer. The Supreme Court overturned President Harry Truman's national emergency. Trump cited Obama in declaring a national emergency, saying, quote, we may be using one of the national emergencies that Obama signed having to do with cartels, criminal cartels. It's a very good emergency he signed. This order had nothing to do with walls. It actually froze financial assets. And ironically, in 2014, both Trump and Mike Pence said Obama should not use executive authority on Dreamers. Trump had tweeted, quote, Repubs must not allow Prez Obama to subvert the Constitution because he is unable to negotiate with Congress. The world never has enough irony in the era of Trump. When reporters asked Trump about his February summit with North Korea, Trump said Japan Prime Minister Shinzo Abe had nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize for opening a dialogue with North Korea. Trump also complained that Obama was there for, quote, 15 seconds before he was awarded the prize, And quote, he didn't even know what he got it for, adding, I'll probably never get it, but that's okay. Trump claimed, Abe gave me the most beautiful copy of a letter he sent. AP could not confirm Trump's claim. Japanese Foreign Ministry said it cannot comment on details of the exchange. We did learn today on Sunday, just so you know, that it was actually Trump's White House that asked Abe to write that letter and nominate him. As Trump was speaking on Friday at the Rose Garden, the dystopian Hulu series, The Handmaid's Tale, was filming for season 3 in and around Washington, D.C. Onlookers tweeted confusion about whether it was a real-life protest instead. Ahead of him signing the bill, conservative commentator Ann Coulter tweeted, Trump is not fighting, and quote, the goal of national emergency is for Trump to scam the stupidest people in his base for 2 more years. When asked about Coulter's influence, Trump told reporters, quote, I don't know her. I hardly know her. I haven't spoke to her in any way in over a year, adding, quote, I have nothing against her, but she's off the reservation. On Friday, Coulter fired back, saying in an interview, it was one thing, the promise he made every single day at every single speech, adding, the only national emergency is that our president is an idiot. On Friday, House Democrats said they will vote on a joint resolution overriding Trump's national emergency, forcing Senate Republicans to go on record after several spoke against Trump declaring an emergency. Pelosi and Schumer said in a statement, Trump's declaration, quote, if unchecked, would fundamentally alter the balance of powers, inconsistent with our founders' vision, adding, quote, Congress cannot let the president shred the Constitution. On Friday, the first legal challenge was filed against Trump's national emergency by legal advocacy group Public Citizens on behalf of 3 Texas landowners and an environmental group. Government watchdog group CREW sued as well, saying Trump's DOJ failed to show the legal authority of his national declaration by refusing to provide documents requested under the Freedom of Information Act. The ACLU announced a lawsuit against the Trump regime over his, quote, blatantly illegal declaration, saying there is no emergency. This is unconstitutional power grab that hurts American communities. On Friday, California Governor Newsom and Attorney General Xavier Becerra said the state would sue the Trump regime over his declaration. Newsom called Trump's wall a vanity project, a monument to stupidity. On Friday, CNN reported Press Secretary Sanders has been interviewed in the Mueller probe. Sanders said Trump, quote, urged me, like he has everyone in the administration, to fully cooperate with a special counsel. The White House did not immediately grant Mueller's team an interview with Sanders. The interview took place late last year, around the time the special counsel interviewed John Kelly. While it is unclear what the topics were, 2 areas of interest appear to be how she composed statements made on the podium defending Trump and Sanders' statements relating to the June 9th Trump Tower meeting. But we're not done. This was all happening towards the end of the week. On Wednesday, Jerome Corsi had filed an amicus brief arguing for the court to impose a gag order on Stone. On Friday, Corsi also sued Roger Stone for defamation, seeking damages in excess of $25 million. On Friday, Mueller's team said in a new filing that search warrants executed on accounts in the investigation into Russian hackers uncovered communications between Roger Stone with Guccifer 2.0 and with, drumroll please, WikiLeaks. The warrants were part of the case against 12 Russian GRU officers. Although the context of the communications was not provided, this was the clearest indication yet of Stone's direct contact with WikiLeaks. Stone's attorneys objected to his case being labeled as related to the Russian hacking case and asked to be moved to a new judge. The judge denied the request, saying they are indeed related. The judge also issued a gag order for Stone in and around Washington, D.C.'s courthouse where the case is being heard, and she said she could change her mind and amend her order to broaden the gag, quote, if necessary. On Friday, Mueller's team filed a memo with the court in Virginia saying Paul Manafort's crimes, including tax and bank fraud, were brazen and serious, and noting federal guidelines for such crimes would be 19.5 to 24.5 years. The memo said Manafort, quote, acted for more than a decade as if he were above the law and failed to pay millions of taxes. Adding, the sentence here should reflect the seriousness of these crimes to deter others. The memo also said, quote, Manafort's age does not eliminate the risk of recidivism he poses, saying his criminal activity has occurred over more than a decade, and he conspired to tamper with witnesses after indicted. Mueller's team also said they would fine Manafort tens of millions of dollars. Judge T.S. Eliot has set a sentencing date. Manafort will be sentenced in his Manafort will be sentenced in his D.C. case on March 13th. On Friday, The Guardian reported a senior Belgian, and this got very little attention, a senior Belgian intelligence officer is under investigation for allegedly exchanging confidential information with a woman believed to be a Russian agent. Additionally, Clement Vanderboer, a head of counterintelligence at GISS, was suspended for allegedly shredding confidential documents as part of the scheme. The Belgian capital is home to NATO headquarters. On Friday, at the Munich Security Conference, German Chancellor Angela Merkel addressed the conference with critiques of U.S. foreign policy, receiving a sustained standing ovation from everyone in the room except for Ivanka Trump. Vice President Mike Pence defended U.S. policy, told the audience at the conference that he brings greetings from Trump, and not a single person clapped. Pence also followed Trump's lead, criticizing NATO allies, saying they, quote, still need to do more, adding the U.S. expects, quote, every NATO member to put in place a credible plan to meet the 2% threshold. The Munich Security Conference report cited the Trump regime for displaying, quote, an irritating enthusiasm for strongmen across the globe and, quote, disdain for international institutions and agreements. On Sunday, in an op-ed titled Phony Wall, Phony Emergency, the New York Times editorial board called out Trump for his breathtaking display of executive disregard for separation of powers. The editorial board also mocked Trump for leaving early Friday to head to Mar-a-Lago after signing the bill, noting Trump, quote, plans to manage the border crisis from the golf course at Mar-a-Lago this weekend. So that was it, folks. 188 items, a lot having to do with the Mueller probe and the House committees getting underway with their investigation. So expect the chaos to continue. And I just need to call out again as we open this, the spectacular way Trump, when he didn't get his way, used executive fiat to declare a national emergency after Congress said no to his funding the wall. This is spectacular. Don't let it get lost in the chaos. Until next week, have a good one. Thank you.